Let me welcome all of you to this panel discussion. My name is Roger Bruchetti, and I'm Group Director for U.S. Public Policy at the Computing Technology Industry Association, TIA. And I'm happy to chair this panel discussion on information technology, aid to energy conservation, and public consumption. By way of background, begin by saying that the IT industry is not a newcomer to either environmental policy discussions or energy conservation policy discussions. For anyone who looks at the history of either, on the environmental side, particularly in discussions about hazardous waste disposal, computer industry in particular, CRTs and other related computer equipment, have been at the center of many debates about environmental policy and hazardous waste disposal. On the energy conservation side of things, virtually every major energy conservation plan developed since the 1970s relies in one way or another on IT, either all the way from your home thermostat being computerized to the ability to make automobiles lighter, more fuel efficient, and we've recently seen an announcement from Air France of their intent to make their fleet far more energy efficient through the use of more computerized aircraft. So that the IT industry has been involved in both the debates about environmental policy and energy conservation. And as these two debates have merged as a result of global climate changes, and the issue of energy consumption has become both an energy and an environmental issue. The question has arisen, what is the role of the IT industry? And is the IT industry a net contributor or a net detractor from global energy consumption and the resulting carbon footprints that that energy consumption typically leaves? Today's panel is designed to share differing views on this issue, recognizing that it's a relatively new issue where ground is being broken really as we speak, understanding the role of the IT industry on what's an increasingly important topic. Not far behind the awareness of the role that the IT industry plays have been the first discussions raised in Europe and elsewhere over whether or not the IT industry should somehow be regulated in order to address the energy of it, either in court or in court. Today's panel is going to sort of lay the groundwork for a more intelligent discussion about these issues. We have four, I think, very well qualified experts on the subject. The order that will go with the presentations are Phil Weil with Google, Kurt Raw with TX, Eric Massenet, sorry, with Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, and Doug Johnson with the Consumer Electronics Association. We've asked each of them to begin with a brief presentation, with an overview of their organization's perspective on this issue. Then we'll have some conversation among the panelists and open the discussion to questions. As with all of the panels taking place this morning, we have a hard stop at about 12:25 because lunch will be taking place in the Ticonderoga room, not from where we're in this morning. So, without any further delay on my end, why don't you start and we'll work our way right now.
Great, thanks. So, first thing I want to do is dispel any illusions you might have that you might actually answer definitively the question about whether IT is the savior of the problem. I don't think the data is there. So I think that overall is, and I think Roger alluded to this, it's fair to say that information technology as a whole has made a huge difference in energy efficiency across our economy and our society, from transportation, the ability to design systems in a way that makes them much more energy efficient, much lighter, much more aerodynamic, etc. That's something you couldn't do the way 20 years ago or 30 years ago, you couldn't do what you do today. So there are many, many ways in which computing technology, I think, has made our economy much, much more efficient across the board. That said, IT equipment does use energy, and a fair amount of it, and in fact, I think it's fair to say that for much of the IT sector for the last 25 years, it's been focused on price, performance, and features, not on energy efficiency. And the last few years, I think we've seen improvement, but there's still a long way to go. So that there is a lot of room for making things much more efficient. I think both Kurt and Eric are going to talk a little bit, I think, about the overall energy footprint of IT equipment. I think there has been a lot of hype the last number of years and estimates of as high as, you know, IT equipment in 10 years will be at 50% of U.S. Energy consumption. I think that's pretty much hype and hysteria, and I think we need to be very careful not to go off half-cocked based on those kinds of estimates, which really, I think, are completely off the mark. But I think, as I said, there is a lot of room for improvement, and particularly in the energy efficiency of the end devices and of data centers. And there's a role there for government. The EPA and the DOE and the Energy Star program here in the U.S. have made a lot of progress the last few years in developing specifications that push for higher efficiency in PCs and CIM servers, and they're looking at data centers as well. And the industry has banded together, in fact, to try to move efficiency faster than the market would on its own. Because the natural pressure in the market is to drive down cost, and often you can save a little money by making things less efficient. So in particular, last year, we, together with Intel and HP, Dell, IBM, Lenovo, a number of other companies, the World Wildlife Fund and others, formed the Climate Savers Computing Initiative, which is starting with the ENERGY STAR specifications for PCs and then driving over the next few years toward higher and higher efficiency, and bringing into that coalition not just the manufacturers but also major consumers, purchasers of IT equipment, so that we can drive volume for high efficiency equipment faster and as a result drive down what is today, in fact, a fairly modest price premium, but still one that is noticeable in the marketplace. So I think, just to summarize, I think that there is a lot of room for improvement on energy efficiency. I think we need to be careful not to get hysterical about the scope of the problem, but I think at the same time, we, like every other industry, need to pay attention to the energy consumed by our products and really work to improve.
Thanks. Good morning. I'm Kurt Hoff with IAS. What I'd like to do is put energy consumption, what we know about the energy consumption of current, in some context. Can people hear okay? Right, good. essentially, there have been a number of studies done over the past several years which give some information that was wrong about the energy consumed by the internet. Now, what do you define as the energy as servers? Studies we did in the early 2002 estimate that that's about 0.1 to 0.2% of national energy. So there is some direct savings there. Maybe it's the internet, this is a study that Doug's organization conducts. So we do have to look at that. But then there's some other areas. Manufacturing of equipment products, I'm not sure. Eric's going to discuss that. But really big unknown in terms of the energy impact of the internet is what's really going on in terms of how the economy, how businesses work, how that is, that energy consumption is leveraged or changed by that good mover, given it completely more efficiently. There are a lot of ways things can change. The process of data, including supply chain management, supply chain management, better inventory management. But it's not really clear exactly what's going on. At a national level, the energy intensity of the economy has increased at an accelerating rate since the late 1990s, for example, from the mid to late 80s to the mid to late 90s. This is increasing about 1% of U.S. energy consumed per dollar GDP units in real terms. That, over the last almost decade, is increasing roughly around 3% per year. Something is going on, but exactly how much of that is attributable to the internet is not known. That's a very high leverage point in a very important area of understanding the internet. So that is just an overall frame for where we're talking about the relative energy consumption, where it's maybe, say, 3 to 5% very likely on the U.S. consistent consumption, 1 to 2% of energy consumption. And some cities are developing it's very large one final thing is even though the dollars of the energy per GDP would increase, if that allows the economy to grow faster, it may not result in an increase in capacity of energy per GDP. It's just not that well understood.
Thanks, Kurt. So my name is Eric Massenet. I work at the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. My research area is looking at the overall environmental footprint of various products. The focus on electronics, so I'm going to follow up on the comments of Bill and Kurt and add my 2 cents on some of the greater impacts of IT. But before I do that, I just want to second that you should dispel any notion that we won't be able to answer this question today of whether or not IT equipment is a net aid or a net culprit in energy consumption. It's very tempting to be able to characterize IT that way, especially from a policy perspective. When we know something is an aid, we can promote it, and we know something is a culprit, we can work to prove it or in extreme cases to discourage its use. However, the information we have today and even the methods we have for framing the question are still in their nascency. So let me get started then on the indirect impacts of IT. So as Kurt mentioned, the correct energy consumption over plug loads that we call of PCs and data centers is roughly 3 to 5% of U.S. electricity consumption. At the lab, we've looked at what are the manufacturing stage energy use and greenhouse gas implications of making all of the servers, of making all of the PCs that we consume pretty readily here in the U.S. And we did a case study on the state of California looking at office computers. And we found that roughly, if you take an office building in any given year, that office building will drive just as much energy consumption to manufacture all of the new PCs that it purchases as it will consume directly operationally when using those computers. So you can take roughly the energy used in copy the content for directly in the U.S. and double it to account for the manufacturing stage. Most of that energy use is, of course, occurring overseas, as Kurt said, so typically not on our radar screens. However, in any debate about maximizing the benefits of IT, you really need to take what's called the life cycle approach, considering all of the impacts related to not just the energy in the four walls of our facility. So that's an important aspect of what we're going to discuss today. A couple of other key points I'd like to make before turning over to Doug is that it's important to understand that, as I mentioned at the beginning of my comments, it's a very difficult problem to characterize. So to give you an example, if you look at telework, is it a net benefit or a net cost in terms of energy use? Well, in order to really answer that question, you need to look at who's a typical telecommuter, how high are their commuters, what type of vehicle do they have? If they're working at home, are they now using air conditioning or more heating, and they're running their appliances more. And what we find typically is that, number one, it's very difficult to get the data to answer that question, and I know we've all faced that problem. So anytime you hear numbers quoted about, be very critical because we're not working with very good data sources. We hope to change that, policy can influence that by perhaps funding more R&D or putting in place better data collection mechanisms. But the data to answer that question is quite clear. And even when we have a pretty good idea of whether or not something is good or bad from a net energy perspective, the results are often very scenario dependent. So teleworking generally works well for people who have a long commute, maybe driving gas cars. People that work close to the office, and to generally having the extra equipment, being at home, running air conditioning, using extra heating might not pay off in the long run. So keep that in mind. The last point I'd like to make is that somewhere in this debate, we need to acknowledge the significant role of consumption by just meaning all the PCs, the electronic devices that we purchase on a year-by-year basis. It's a difficult problem to address because, of course, sales of new products are important to the economy. Consumers are buying new products because their old products don't necessarily meet their needs anymore. However, most of us buy our computers after 2 to 3 years, and the computers we have are still perfectly good. They could still function for our computing needs for another 7 years. So we can have efficiency gains. We can drive efficiency improvements throughout the system, but year after year, we're consuming more and more electronic gadgets. And at some point, we're going to have to recognize that we need to identify a different path forward if we really want to drive down the energy use associated with gadget systems. And for one last example from our work at the lab, in looking at our California example, we found that if organizations would just extend the life of the computers by 50%, so for example, an engineer might require a really high-powered PC, but when that no longer meets his or her needs, he could give that to someone in, for example, the accounting departments or the administrative departments who might not need a high-powered computer, extend the life of that computer in the organization. And we found that 20% of the manufacturing engineers required to provide computers to the organization could be simply by using products for computers longer in the perfect conditions. So with that, those are just some topics for the discussion today. I'll turn it over to Doug.
Good morning. My name again is Doug Johnson. I'm with the Consumer Electronics Association. The CEA essentially represents the entire range of high-tech consumer products that's connected, informed, and used products in the field. And as a trade association, of course, we're no exception. As an industry sector, we're no exception to what Roger said earlier about the fact that every part of our economy and industry sector is looked at, and of course, environmental impact is profiled. And CEA, our members, have addressed energy efficiency in a very comprehensive way, certainly in the public policy front, with the Congress and the Energy Act of 2007, at the state level with energy bills, of course, with policymakers, all levels of government, and efficiency decision, at the state and federal level. But it's also an international issue. And we've spent time in the past year or two in China and the EU, which, like many countries and regions, are focused on well. So it's a very formative area of policymaking, but one that's obviously important to us. As was referenced earlier, the lifeblood of our industry is innovation, consumer choice, and competition. And so on energy efficiency, what we're trying to do is make sure that we're on the right path to achieving efficiency and conservation, but at the same time protecting innovation, consumer choice, and competition in our industry. We found that really the best practices approach to these end-use devices has been our program. It's worked quite well over several years in addressing energy efficiency across all the major categories of products in our industry. Again, we're talking about products you see in the local economies field. Research and analysis, we've invested a lot there as well. It's very important to understand where we're at today in terms of energy use, so understanding where we're going and what the trends are in our industry. So we've done a study to quantify how much energy smart homes use in the home. A couple of numbers were 12% of the residential electricity pie, somewhere between heating and cooling in terms of energy use. So I guess we're not talking about the four, but we're right in there. The second study that Kurt referenced a moment ago on the secondary impacts of using our products, of course, is a primary impact that it empowers to provide consumers with these functions. But we also wanted to better understand, as Eric mentioned as well, the impact of using these products in telecommuting and e-commerce activities. And so through PIOTS, we've been able to quantify that the way that I've done before. Industry standards also play an important role here. And CA, like other organizations out there, the industry standards organization, is very important to have an agreed upon way to measure energy. Because we're talking about these complex integrated products. TVs, televisions, for example, needed a new way to measure their energy. The standard that was out there up until last year that was 30 years old became black and white TVs. It wasn't appropriate for today's black and white high definition television. So we should come together with other stakeholders to develop a standard way of measuring energy use. So therefore, we can quantify that part of the pie and also support programs such as Energy Star with Brian standards to develop their specifications. Finally, consumer education has been very important, will continue to be very important as well. Communities come together to provide and expand upon consumer sophisticated energy. If you've been to your state energy office website or utility website or see material in the bill in the mail, we found that there was kind of a lack of electronic specific sophisticated energy. So we tried to round those out and provide more information to those parties. At the same time, also developed a website called myelectronics.org, on which we put a large number of tools and information on the environmental impact of electronics. We've added an energy use calculator so consumers can go on there today and identify what products they have in the home, about how often they use them, and then calculate and understand the difference in watts and dollars it takes to power these products. So again, it's been a very comprehensive approach we've taken to this issue. There are a lot of unknowns, but there are some known things as well. We feel that the best practices approach in place with Energy Star, and we continue to invest in that.
Thank you very much. We're going to proceed to discussion among panels. If I can, though, I'd like to start with a question that I invite any of the panel members to comment on. A couple of weeks ago, an online publication, Digital Journal, featured a story about energy consumption in what you might describe more as the electronics area, not just the industry. But the article was interesting because it pointed to one aspect of energy consumption that's often overlooked, and that is a number of devices that remain on all the time, sort of continuous on. And they went through sort of a catalog of all the devices you find in the average home that are consuming some measure of energy, electricity, even when they're not in active use. And as a result, reading that article before I left my home this morning, and I don't think my home is atypical, two children, typical suburban home, I sort of counted all of the VCRs, plasma, TVs, computers, printers, and everything that were remaining on after I turned everything off and thought I was leaving the house without any electricity being consumed, and there were over 20 devices running all day long, every day. I wonder if any of the panelists have given any thought to this issue, see any trends or aspects of it that could be addressed. And as best I can tell, when I try to do my own mental calculation, the number of devices that we have in our home that are running all day long actually increased by about 30% over the course of the last year. So we're going backwards in the Crochetti.
How old are your kids?
15 and 11, so yeah. Things may be getting worse before they get better, yeah. I don't know. But I'd invite the panelists to comment on this. It's an interesting and important aspect of the discussion, and one that may lend itself to either best practices or regulation, whatever may happen.
Sure, I think several of us probably have something to say about that. Roger's referring to, of course, products in standby, what's happening when that product's not as active on. And that has, in fact, been a focus of the Energy Star for many years, although Energy Star is now going to address energy efficiency in a more holistic way by also taking a look at the consumer electronics. Standby power is about 25% of energy use. It's not wasted energy, as you might think or assume when these things are plugged in, but it does serve functions that you want. It has some product to be more controlled, memory functions, networking functions, obviously increasingly there is all products that are networked together. So there is some amount of energy that's required for those, but Energy Star has been a successful approach in driving that down in a competitive way over time. So we've seen evidence of that borne out of the study that HIACS did on energy use, power then, as I mentioned, the focus also nowadays is on active mode as well. Both topics get a lot of attention.
Two separate issues here that I see. One is devices that are off and still drawing power, which is a standby. The other issue is devices that get left on and continue to draw power because they're left on. For example, in 2016, the state of the Department of Energy does a TNT energy consumption and did surveys of demographic data, statistics, and number of households to get an idea of usage patterns. Found that 15 to 20% of households left their computers on all night. In most cases, power management is not enabled, so they're all kind of weighed by 70, 80 watts of average. 24/7 is too high. So, we looked at the whole population of PCs and found that more energy was actually consumed when these devices were on, not being used when they're on and being used. So, I think that's the second issue. There are a number of devices, particularly you'll see PCs and monitors that are on, and that is can be saved by enabling power.
Yeah, and if I could just add a comment to that, I mean, power management is in some sense a special case of what we've been calling energy proportional computing. A lot of these devices, they're turned on, they're plugged in, they're not doing anything, they consume a lot of power. In idle mode, even in standby mode in some cases, there's been some interesting data collected recently by Noah Horowitz at NRDC, DVRs and other sort of more recent kinds of consumer electronics, indicating that they, even in standby mode, still consume amount of power, and in many cases, in fact, they don't go into standby because they want to be there to receive updates from the network or in case there's a show that you might want to record that meets your criteria. So they just stay on. And that's an easy thing to do for the designers, but from an energy point of view, it's insane. It's like leaving your car running in the garage because you want it to be on, ready to go, in case in the middle of the night you decide to run out and get some ice cream. Something like that. It's nuts. But I think that the general idea is that what you need is systems that where the amount of energy they consume is really proportional to the amount of useful work that they're doing. And today, when a system is in standby, if it meets the Energy Star requirements, say for a PC, the new Energy Star 4 requirements, it's going to consume a couple of watts, which isn't very much. If it's idle, it might consume 50 or 60 watts, which is quite a bit. You know, that's like a not very efficient light bulb left on all the time. But when it's idle, it's not really doing any useful work. It's just there in case you want to use it. So it ought to be consuming 2 or 3 watts. And sleep mode, except so that it can actually do some work instantly if the network packet comes in or something like that. But systems today, to be ready to receive data from the network, or in the case of my computers at home, I've got several PCs, we've got power management enabled, it doesn't always work. But I've also got a backup system, set up to back up all the PCs. And we want that to run at night. Well, it's hard to do that if they all go to sleep. And so it would be nice if the system could run backups, but not have to stay on. So you need a system that really, when it's not doing much work, consumes much less energy. And the CPUs, I think, are in much better shape these days than they were a few years ago. Intel and AMD have made a lot of progress on reducing the energy consumption of the CPUs when they're not doing much, when they're even just in idle mode. But the memory, the disk, the graphics subsystem in PCs today still consumes a lot of energy, even when it's not doing anything, even when it's idle. And so I think there's a lot of room for improvement. I think it's going to take some engineering and innovation, but I think it's something that the industry really needs to work on across the board.
So one of the most interesting Energy Star specification developments is going on right now, set-top boxes. If you look at our study, you'll find active mode and standby to be about the same mode that you see always on, never drop into a very low power mode. So this Energy Star specification brings together the service providers, which are very important in these
will start to see the power down features off, because actually some are being shipped now. More going forward, you'll find greater efficiency in these products that are left always on. Sometimes for good reason. Again, if you have a program you want to watch, you run some on a pile in the middle of the night, you want to capture that, have it ready to watch the next day. It might be very important for that box to be on for the screen. But again, we have to truly strike the right balance between efficiency and, of course, meeting consumer demands.
Let me ask the panelists if any of them would like to raise. I have another subject I'd like you all to expand on, but if you would like to raise an additional issue or comment on something one of the other panelists had to say. If not, in my opening comments, I raised the example of Air France, which is a reasonably well-managed business, announcing recently with the decision to invest about $3 billion in their fleet to make it more energy efficient over the next 2 to 3 years. And it's reasonable to assume that Air France did this, A, because they're predicting the cost of energy as increasing, and therefore, to some extent, they'll recover the increased investments through reduced operating expenses. B, they've gone out of their way to show the world that they are reducing their company's carbon footprint, and no doubt they are hoping and assuming that there'll be more passengers flying Air France than would be the case otherwise, because of the leadership they've exhibited.
I think there's an option. There's a reason C, which is to try to forestall the condition.
I forgot to get that was my C. At C, they're looking over the horizon at the European Union, which has been focusing a fair amount of attention on the energy footprint and the carbon emissions from commercial aviation. So, assuming that Air France as a corporation is not vastly different from lots of other companies looking at the cost of energy and reducing the cost of energy and looking at consumer interest in this subject matter and potential for government regulation, the question I have for the panelists is with regard to the IT industry, what is the way forward that you all would expect to see? Some combination of individual businesses, best practices, standards, government regulation. We have in the United States, obviously, a spectacular example of government intervention in the CAFE standards for the automotive industry, which are absolutely regulated by the government. And do any of you have sort of an observation on how you see area moving forward in the United States and potentially other parts of the world as well?
Sure. Energy efficiency, our experience at Google is that it's a key issue operationally for our business because of the cost of it, because of the environmental impact, which is something that we care about. And we've had people, I've been at Google now for 2 years, we've been building our own servers for just about forever since the company was in business. And have had engineers working very hard to make those servers as energy efficient as possible to really optimize total cost of ownership, not just acquisition costs, but operational costs. So I think there are businesses, and I don't think we're unique, I think there are businesses that worry about that a lot, Air France being a good example. At the same time, I think that if we look at the pace of improvement in energy efficiency across the industry, and the PCs in particular, there aren't sufficient market pressures for the market on its own to drive energy efficiency very quickly for PCs. Because when a consumer buys a PC, and they've been educated partly by the industry for the last 30 years to think about price, performance, and features, they're not thinking about energy efficiency. And so they're not going to spend an extra 20, 30, 50 bucks, unless they're really educated about it, to buy a more efficient PC. They'll buy one that's cheaper, even if it's a little less efficient. And that's what's going to happen. So the market on its own is driving higher efficiency very slowly. Maybe 1% to 2% improvement in efficiency per year is the data we've seen. And so what's needed is either voluntary movement by the industry, like what we've done with Climate Savers, or some amount of government regulation, voluntary in the case of Energy Star, or some combination. I think to drive things faster, because it's not a technology problem. It's not an issue of we don't know how to build these systems to be more efficient. It's an issue of volume production and an issue of where the engineers are focusing their energy. So I think that there is some combination of both of those that's needed.
To jump on
Bill's
remarks for a moment, keep in mind also that many of the end use products aren't battery operated, so the big driver there for their efficiency because it's simply like batteries and long battery life. Use longer between charges, so for many products there is that driver. And there has always been the driver in the street for efficiency just based on the physics of things that are smaller, faster, cheaper. When it's closer together, heat becomes a greater concern. Excess heat. Longevity of the product, so that's been an influence on the product design. Can it be an energy efficiency be a greater concern? Can it be accelerated?
Sure.
Through programs and incentives, as Bill mentioned, such as Energy Star, and that's an important driver as well. So the question is how to move things along, whether through natural or program incentives, in such a way that again keeps the balance and provides consumers with the devices that they want, features and functions that they want, but at the same time, satisfying enough the policymakers and others who are concerned about every industry sector doing its own part to save energy.
I would add, though, that there are some important programs, and policy does play a critical role in this area. So one key policy point for green purchasing for government agencies, for market organizations. So, for example, there's a new environmental specification. It deals not only with energy efficiency, but also some of the design features and longevity. And federal government is moving towards requiring EPA certification for all computer vendors. I've heard statistics suggesting that the amount of high equipment that the federal government purchases really impressive. Something like 10 or 20% of all sales of units. And it costs it to the state government. So that's one area that we sort of kickstart the consumption and drive for. Greater adoption. That's fairly straightforward and fairly easy to implement in large organizations. And I believe we have those pretty much across the board for a lot of government agencies.
Yeah, I believe President Bush issued an executive order last year essentially requiring for all purchases where there is a relevant specification. But I think driving things from the purchasing end, I think, is one way with those kinds of procurement guidelines, either in the private sector or the public. One very good way to push for change. So.
We also need to recognize industry-led efforts from the retail side as well. A retailer called Walmart, which is doing some amazing things through its supply chain, drive greater efficiency, savings ultimately for its customers. And so you'll see that pressure, I think, as well from the distribution retail side, the industry for more efficient products, products and more sustainable.
Can I ask the panel to comment on a very important issue that sort of underlies this, a couple of you have touched on, and that is the extent to which market forces alone may be the driver of all of this. I'm looking backwards, obviously, the cost of energy is such that there was a time when people didn't ask and didn't care what the mileage on the automobile was. It was spending $3,000 to buy a Cadillac, and gasoline costs 15 cents a gallon. What difference does it make what the mileage is? And even as recently as kind of 15 years ago, it was the price of oil as a benchmark for all energy was so low that it really had no impact on the sale of Hummers with the gas pilot. Now that was then, and this is now, and the price of the oil, again, index for energy costs in general, is hovering around $100 a barrel, and there are those who are suggesting it will double or triple or go to some, and my question is looking, since each of you has to some extent looked at the future of energy cost as part of the overall outlook for this, do any of you see natural market forces playing a principal role? And I just, one other data point, that article from Digital Journal went on to sort of estimate how much each day each device costs you, an average electricity cost. And as I was driving to work, I was sort of counting up all these things and realized by the time I got to work that these things were costing me like $3 a day. That may not be enough to sort of make me slam on the brakes and stop what I'm doing, but if it reaches the point where it's $30 a day or $300 a day, I'm going to start unplugging. And there is a point at which prices will take over the discussion about this. Do any of you see the market playing a principal role in all of this, or is it really a matter of environmental concern, global warming?
First of all, the estimate of $3 a day is incredibly high.
Oh,
essentially, if you need that much electricity, that would be about the average per house electricity consumption.
Total.
Yeah, so.
Not just standby.
This thing said, this article said that the plasma TV consumes $160 a month. And since we have three plasma TVs, maybe that's what it is.
See that article?
Yeah, that's not sure it's true. I mean, a typical household in the U.S. is about it pulls average a kilowatt, right? So, 25 kilowatt hours a day, which is about $2.50 a day.
And I claim no accuracy for this author, whether it's 3 cents a day or $3 a day.
But $300 a day? I suspect that would change your behavior.
Right.
$3 a day, as you pointed out? Probably wouldn't, and I think that's, if you look at most of these devices, the cost of energy is not driving most people's decisions today.
And as you look to the future of the cost of energy, do you see any changes that would change that equation? My real question is, we look to the future, are the energy cost increases that you expect to take place at any time in the foreseeable future going to be sufficient so that the market really takes
see it on maybe for more businesses, because once you get to a certain critical mass of equipment,
as Doug mentioned, I think he's absolutely right. For many devices, there are very natural forces that drive them to be very energy efficient. Whether it's a cell phone, any kind of portable device, anything that runs on battery power, anything that's a very small form factor, there the physics and other reasons why you want those to be energy. The wall warts that you use to charge them historically have not been very efficient, and in fact, people end up, you buy three of them for your cell phone, so you've got one at home and one at work and one in your suitcase for when you travel. The next year, you get a new cell phone, you throw out those three wall warts and throw them in the landfill, and the life cycle cost is horrendous. So there are big issues there.
By the way, you know what was wrong with my numbers? That was per year, not month.
Okay. That maybe is...
Divide that by 12.
Yeah. So, but I do think that there, from an economic point of view, the amount that most people spend on energy for one of these devices is such that alone will not change their buying behavior. And in businesses, there are often... And across the commercial and for that matter residential world, there are split incentives. You've got the IT guys who buy the IT equipment, you've got the facilities guys who pay the electric bill for the buildings. In a lot of businesses, they've never met each other. And they've got separate budgets. And one of them is a CapEx budget and one is an OpEx budget. And they can't actually trade off between them. And that's bad for the business. It hurts the business's total, so bottom line over the years. And I think some businesses have begun to figure out how to fix it. That's true for businesses and renters where the physical plant of the building that they rent is up to the landlord to upgrade, whether it's the HVAC system, the lighting, and so on. But they're paying the electric bill. And so we've got split incentives there that, that lead to what overall is bad behavior. And I think that's something where the market forces are not aligned to really push for the right outcome.
Consumers, nationally, are the ultimate driver of this electronics industry. And whether consumers react knowing exactly how much power their products require, how much money it costs to buy these products, it's not as important as getting this information to consumers in the first place that they can make these decisions. One of the more interesting elements of the recent Federal Energy Act was a provision that would require the Commission to work with parties to come up with a standard way of disclosing this information to consumers. Dovetail with the industry's interest in doing the same. We've made a short-term investment in the website, which gives consumers information today, but longer term, the information ought to be available at the point of sale, and that's what, in fact, Walmart is focusing on its initiative with suppliers. So providing this information, I think, is important before consumers can make their own decisions about whether that's a lot, not enough. But it, providing energy's disclosures, whether it's in the form of a label or information online, challenge, but it's not impossible. In the industry, you do have to consider the fact that consumer products are more complex than your refrigerated washing machine. You have these labels for a while. They're also used in different ways. Consumer patterns differ by product category, sometimes in dramatic ways. And also the way you buy and configure these products. You have a lot of products you bought, there's some different high box or the energy use profiles. So all this has to be taken into consideration, but the objective here is to provide
just one quick bit of empirical evidence on whether or not market forces are sufficient. If we take a look at California, which arguably has the highest or among the highest residential electricity rates in the country, what's happened in California for reducing residential electricity consumption has been building standards and appliance standards, not necessarily consumers reacting to that higher electricity price. So we have great historical data that show energy trends in California, the biggest reductions in energy use in the residential sector at home when we instituted, for example, refrigerator not
refrigerators. Let me open the subject to the floor if anyone would like to ask a question to anyone on the panel or add a comment to this. Stand up so everyone can hear you and introduce yourself. That would be helpful.
Comment quickly on the first question regarding an easy way for consumers to power down the computer to save everything. And we've got it today. I've got it in my computer. So I think it's called hibernating.
Or sleep, for that matter.
Or sleep, yeah. But one of the... Well, it's still,
even when it's off, it uses about the same energy in sleep mode as when it is off, which is a couple watts.
So, but it does save quite a bit of energy as we're just reading it. One of my colleagues, Bruce Norman, has studied this issue, and it almost always comes down to an information barrier. Consumers don't really understand, you know, how to use these modes and whether or not the computer into that mode, everything you save it, cache it. Some manufacturers use sleep mode, they use hibernate mode, you know, the terminology. So there is a new standard that Bruce, my colleague, helped promote, call the numbers, it's Hadoop new standard, which has, you know, very user-friendly symbols and very user-friendly terminology for accomplishing just that, putting a computer to sleep, that hopefully all the industry can adopt so that we can reduce this information. People know, yes, I can hit this button and reduce the energy use of my PC's information.
One thing that's also coming along, different memory techniques, so essentially you don't have to boot up the back of the computer. So I think this idea is that I know that I have to use the back
But sleep mode basically is something that uses the same energy as when the system is off. The only way to use less is to actually unplug it from the wall. Or use a power strip that really shuts them off. And when it works, and it doesn't always, that's one of the problems with it, and also a lot of people don't understand how to configure it, but when it works, then the system goes off, and you hit the button to turn it back on, it comes on, and you know, a few seconds later, it's right back where it was. I highly recommend that.
A lot of these good points have been translated into this consumer tips I mentioned earlier, and that's why we're focused a lot on disseminating that information so you can get this information.
We're just about past our time. Are there any other questions? If not, please join me in thanking the panelists for their research. And thank you all for joining us.